Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I'm so excited to be here as Drea Kaufman and I dive into the advanced guard of the Order of the Phoenix. So, with me, as she is always, is the one and only Drea Kaufman.
I want to be part of the advanced guard.
I know. I mean, well, there's a lot of people in part of this advanced guard, so I'm sure they'd let you in.
There's a lot more in the advanced guard than there is in the movie.
Oh, definitely. And what's fun, too, is that, yeah, well, I'll just spoil it here before we even really get started, is just that she's doing a good job of introducing characters that will mean something later on in the series that never mean anything in the movie. So, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So, but before we completely spoil the
before
chapter.
Before I totally take Matt off track here and I'm like, let's go Rogue, y'all.
Oh, man. Rogue One. Pulling out. Yep, that's right. Well, I'm sure that you're all wondering, well, are they going to say anything about Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Grindelwald? And, well, we'll just say go over to the 602 Club and listen to our episode of that over there. You can find out all of our thoughts on Fantastic Beasts, the Crimes of Grindelwald, the brand new movie. But... of course, you can find us all over the place, wherever you get your podcasts. In fact, you know, we've recently showed up on places like Spotify. I think you can even find us on the iHeartRadio app now in their podcast section. I mean, we're everywhere you get your podcasts. But if you really do like Owl Posts, help us grow. So wherever you are, give us a star rating and review if you can. And especially on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, that really does help people find this show. That is still the main place that everybody gets their podcast. So when you let us know what you think of the show, we will read your review on the show. And thank you for that. So please go over there, do that. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, which is the entire Nerd Party network all in one place. You can see everything we're doing there. It's a great place to follow. If you want to talk to us too, you can use the hashtag OwlPosts and we'll be able to respond to you. Of course, we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And last but not least, thenerdparty.com, where you can find everything that's going on Nerd Party-wise, as well as thenerdparty.com/contact. You can send an email to Dre and I. Just choose Owl Post, and you can write your thoughts, and we'll be able to respond to you. So, Drea, I really do, you know, we kind of talked about last week that Harry Potter... in this beginning part of the book, it really feels like he is, you know, the frog in the boiling pot of water. And I feel like that this chapter starts with Harry going from simmer to boil. Like, he is just so mad with everything that's happening to him. And it, I think she does a good job of having it. It makes sense why he's so angry.
Yes, if we were Harry, I think we would be angry too, as readers and, you know, people. I think it's a lot to ask for somebody. I mean, it's a lot to ask adults or very mature people to sort of just, you know, remember and not get any positive reinforcement, not get any information, to totally feel lost. Like, it's a lot to ask someone like that to just sort of, like, trust the process. And you can't ask a kid who's been through everything he's been through to just trust the process with no context or information or even just an outright actual asking of that. So it's tough. It's tough on him. He's super angsty. I like how they say, you know, you can't leave. And he's just like, I don't want to anyway. He literally is, he's like angry, depressed.
Yeah. I mean, and why wouldn't you be with everything that's happened to him, with Dementors attacking? He might be expelled from Hogwarts. He might lose everything that he is. In fact, that's one of his main worries is, you know, what is going to happen to me? What if I lose this, you know, what if they rule against me? You know, and he's stewing for days. Like, poor Hedwig comes back and he's like, drop whatever you got in your mouth because I've got letters for you, and you don't return until, like, he's really angry with Hedwig. He's taking it out on her because she's really the only one he has to talk to. He writes letters to everybody and says, don't return until you have information. I don't care what you have to do. Don't return. And he, I love that he feels bad when she leaves because, like, he's, that's his only friend at Pivot Drive.
He's like, oh, now my friend's gone.
Yeah, it's great in that sense that he even as angry as he is, you know, he still feels the remorse of treating somebody badly. And I think, again, that's one of those places where you see Harry's character. But he spends 3 whole days stewing in his room. He doesn't even come out of his room. I just, reading this chapter, I was just feeling for the character who, like you said, he's got no answers. Nobody's giving him anything. And how could you not just be angry and depressed with this that's going on?
He ends up spending a total of 4 days alone in his room, being fed through a cat flap. Like, he's got things to do in there, but ultimately it's kind of like putting him in solitary confinement. Like, no other people to talk to, nothing to do. He clearly doesn't have like a television in there. He's got his, you know, his school books, but that's about it. So it's tough. That is literally designed to sort of break you mentally, and he's already mostly broken at this point.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, because he's put himself in that place too. Like, he doesn't want to talk to the Dursleys. He doesn't want to be around them. What he really wants is his connection with the magical world, and that's gone. I mean, even like, and I think that's part of the reason he feels bad about the way he treated Hedwig. That's his only connection to the magical world, other than, you know, his school books and stuff, which are strewn all about his room. And he's just stewing in this anger and this frustration and this, as I think you well put it, this kind of depression over everything. And he just doesn't know how to handle it. And I think, again, you rightly pointed out at the beginning, he's 15 years old, right? Nobody knows. There are adults who wouldn't know how to handle what happened to him, right? So the fact that he is at the age that he is, and has nobody to speak to, it just makes complete sense that this is happening. And I love that Mr. Dursley, you know, comes to the door and is like, we're leaving. And he's like, okay, fine. And he's like, I don't want you going out. I don't want you getting out of this room. I don't want you touching anything we know. I'm locking your door. He's like, oh, you do that. Like, he just doesn't care at all.
I thought for me, that part actually kind of reinforced this thought that it's depression, because she even makes a point of having Vernon kind of be like skeptical, because he just agreed so easily. Like, yeah, sure, lock me in here. Like, it was like defeatist. And that's just not what we're used to from Harry. That's not what the Dursleys are used to from Harry. Mm-hmm. So that alone sort of kind of sealed the deal for me, that if there was really ever any doubt what he was sort of going through, then like that just, to me, told me exactly what it was. So
yeah, that is a really good point. Like, he's so frustrated and kind of in his own little place. He doesn't have the energy to even care what the Dursleys are doing at this point, like or to
fight for himself.
Yeah. I love that we leave him alone, and then he wakes up kind of as the house is empty, and he hears this really loud crash in the kitchen. And he thinks that possibly, you know, it's burglars. And what it is all of these people that he's met before, a lot
wizards.
Of them.
All of these wizards.
Yeah. And it's Professor Moody and it's Lupin. And I love that he's like, Professor Moody? And he's like, well, I don't know about Professor. I didn't really do a lot of teaching. And I really like Mad-Eye Moody in this chapter, because I think there's more fun to the character. Because, you know, last book, it's somebody pretending to be him. And so we're right. really just getting the real him for the first time here. And he's pretty funny. I mean, he's very sarcastic and he's very matter of fact. He's worried about Harry putting his wand in his back pocket because he might lose a buttock, which I thought was hilarious.
I loved that Tonks was like, she was like, "Wait, who do you know that's lost a buttocks?" Because he's like, yeah. "I've known many wizards," and she's like, "Who do you know that's lost a buttocks?" And he's like, "That's not the point."
Yeah, it's great. It's just great. Oh my gosh, I love that Lupin's there. So you know, Harry is excited to see him. And then you have all of these other wizards that we haven't met yet. We may have heard their names before, but we meet a lot of new wizards. And I love that they're all like, "Oh, he looks just like James," except for, you know, of course, the eyes that look just like Lily. And like they're all kind of whispering with each other. And, you know, we meet some really cool people like Kingsley Stackpole, and you know, we also meet, of course, Nymphadora, who doesn't like to be called Nymphadora, because I love that she finally kind of points out some of the strange names. She's like, "Would you want to be called Nymphadora if your parents had named you that?"
And I think we've met one of the wizards whose name is slipping my mind right now, because he's the gentleman who met Harry like on the street in the first, or in the in the pub.
Mm-hmm. You've got Aphelius Dodge, Dedalius Diggle, Emmeline Vance, Sturgis Podmore.
Diggle, who yeah, he I think met you're right. in the very first book when Hagrid takes him to the pub there.
Yep,
the
for the first time. Yep.
Yeah, I think that's who he meets. It's like the friendly wizard that Harry's like seen around mm-hmm. town or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many people here, and I love that. Moody's like, "Yeah, a surprising number of people volunteered to come get you." Or Lupin says that. And Moody's like, "Yeah, well, the more the guard, the better. The bigger the guard, the better." And I think, you know, it's so exciting. And Harry's just like, "Are we going to the Burrow?" And we find out they're not going to the Burrow because it's too risky, that the headquarters is what Moody calls it, has been set up somewhere else that's undetectable. And that's what's taken a while. And so we start to get a few little answers here as to maybe why, you know, Harry hasn't heard much, because it sounds like there's some pretty secret stuff that's been going on that they've been trying to do. And it's taken longer maybe than they expected it would take.
Yeah, you get a little bit of answers, but Harry just seems so happy to yep. see other wizards and to see that he's not been like completely rejected, and that like the wizarding world like doesn't hate him for what he did. Like he was sort of I don't know, I feel like I can at least relate to that one, where like if you don't have any information and you're left alone with your thoughts, you literally create the world's worst scenario. Like I fought off Dementors, but maybe using underage magic made that the worst thing I could ever do, and now everyone I've ever met hates me and is going to leave me to the wolves, and I'll never be able to do magic. Like he goes to that extreme in his head. So I think just seeing anyone is like, that's enough for him to be like, "I don't need answers right now. I'm just happy that I'm not like that. My worst case scenario I've created in this like little like mind space of mine is not real." He doesn't even ask like who they are or what kind of guard or why he'd need protection. He goes with it. And he's like, "Whatever. I don't care. I'm happy to see another wizard."
Well, I do like that he does try to ask some questions, but Moody's like, "Not here, damn it." Like he's like, "Not here. We're not talking about here." And then he's really frustrated too, because his eye, he says, has gone crazy ever since that other person had been wearing it. And he
said
pops
that's scum. That's scum.
He pops his own eye out to clean it. And I just absolutely love that Tonks is like, "You know how disgusting that is, don't you?"
I just love the banter between Tonks and Moody. Like, you get such a good idea of her character that we're just introduced to, based on just the fact of what we already know about Alistair Moody kind of being crotchety and a little paranoid and like super intense. It's nice that there's someone out there who sort of like taunts him a little bit and mocks him and isn't afraid of him, which you would sort of expect a younger witch or wizard to be. But no, she's just kind of dishing it to him, and you know, he doesn't seem to be too upset about it. So,
well, and I think it creates a real sense of levity finally, because the last, I mean, felt like the beginning of this book, we've been going further and further and further into kind of like this depressive, horrible place. And like all that tension kind of gets released in some ways in this chapter, at least, where Harry, like you said, finally feels some relief from the place that he'd been, which is, you know, Harry's been in the wizarding desert almost. Like there hasn't been anything a part of the world that he's a part of now. And finally, it's almost as if you've hit the ocean and like he just gets to dive back into it. And it's made him, at least in this moment, feel better. And I think that's, and part of that has to be this fun of like being around all these wizards, getting to meet new people. And I think Tonks does a great job in the character of Tonks. I really like in this chapter because she adds so much of that levity. You know, yeah. She really creates a sense of fun and excitement and like goofiness that I feel like Harry really needs in this moment. And she even goes to help him pack, and they get to talking, and it's a lot of fun. And we find out that she's a little bit different than other wizards because she's a metamorphomagus, which is a hard word to say.
I was just going to say, I'm impressed you said that.
Which we find out is somebody that can change their appearance. Which is actually really cool. Like, I kind of want to be one of these.
So does Harry, apparently.
Yeah.
And I like that he says that. He's like, oh, well, do you have to be born that way? Or can you, like, learn to do that? And she looks at him and she's like, you'd like to hide that scar every once in a while, huh? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, you can learn, but it's real difficult.
I think it is really interesting because she does say that they are rare and they're born, not made.
Right.
So it is something that Harry wouldn't be able to do. Like you just have, like, it's very interesting. Like I kind of wish, and I wonder if there is any writings on like Pottermore on what it is that causes that to you to be born like that. Because that would be, I don't know.
Like
it just seems fascinating.
Thing or...
Yeah. If like it's a family trait, you know, I don't know. It just seems very interesting. Or if it's just kind of random where, you know, you just could happen to be born, if you're born with magical ability, you could also have this ability. Yeah.
Yeah. I love though that, she has this, reading through this, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the, I don't know. We're going to cross genres here for a second. A little bit of the new Doctor that they've created on Doctor Who, this sort of like lighthearted, things are kind of serious, but protective, but not in a like overbearing sort of sense, and kind of likes to have fun. I got a little bit of that from Tonks in this chapter. I really enjoyed, though, I think when we're talking about the whimsy she brought, I thought that the part where she jokes about not being able to do housewares as good as her mother does, and she tries to make the sock fold and it just sort of like jumps up and like wiggles and then falls on the top of his trunk. Like, I think that was my favorite part of the whole book because you just watch it and you can just hear it going like in the trunk. And like, it was just, and she knows that like, he doesn't care. She's just trying to keep him engaged and focused and make him comfortable without it being awkward. Like, she's the perfect person to have sent to him in this moment. And I don't know if she even knows that, but she's definitely the right person to be in there with Harry right now.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. I think there's such a, she has such a sense of joy in her, which I think is exactly what Harry needs in this moment. And yeah, watching her try to pack, which she's like, it's not very good, I'm sorry, I think is adorable. I do think it's really interesting too, because it lets you know that, look, all wizards can use these type of spells, right? That you could do the packing spell, you could maybe do the cooking spells and stuff, but there is a talent to it, which, like, so when we see in Fantastic Beasts and Queenie makes dinner and they're like, this is the best meal I've ever had, you know, like there is a talent that goes along with those. So you know, anybody could do that spell, but that doesn't mean right. the food is
going
to be great.
And it also reinforces for us, like, the whole, the fact that, you know, Harry can do a Patronus, which is going to come up in upcoming chapters as he goes to the ministry and has his trial and stuff, that, like, yeah, anyone can know that spell, but not everyone is able to execute it. And it's just, she said that before, yep. but this is just another time that she's definitely painting that picture and reminding mm-hmm. you of the fact that not all wizards are created equal.
Well, and two, that it takes practice and dedication to be able to do mm-hmm. these things, right? Like, and I think that's a really, important thing to say, is that just as with anything, you're not just going to necessarily be able to do something, just because you can do magic doesn't mean you can do all magic.
Or do it well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a really, that's actually a really nice thing to see, like, that magic isn't just magic in the sense, like, oh, like, it's just easy, you know, just as with anything else, like, say you have ability in sports, right? Just because you have that ability doesn't mean that you're going to be able to do everything perfectly, or that you're not going to have to work hard to be able to make that talent even better. So you have to nurture that talent. I think that's the thing that I really like about this, is that, you know, magic is not just some sort of thing that makes life super easy and you don't have to work at it. That's a kind of a neat little tidbit to say, like, even wizards have to work yeah. at being wizards, you know, like, that's good.
I do like, though, that Tonks was, like, really fixated on how cleanly the Dursleys were. And that when she walks into Harry's room, which is, you know, basically a giant mess because he's a teenager who's been locked in his room for 4 days. And she's like, ah, this is much better. This makes me much more comfortable. Like, this is more like it. It's just so funny. Like, just everything Harry needed. It's just everything we needed as readers.
She would probably hate, like, Hermione's room.
Her and Hermione. I'm curious. I don't think we get much interactions between the two of them. But something we haven't really touched on yet here is the fact that we sent this. So we mentioned very early on in the episode that this is different from the movie, and that we only get about two or three people showing up in the movie. Like, you get Moody, Lupin, Tonks, and I think maybe Kingsley, I think, comes this time too. But you don't get as many. You've got three or four extra people in this go. And, you know, Moody even says, like you mentioned, oh, the more the merrier, basically. We don't really know why yet. And he doesn't seem to be wondering that. But there's a lot of people that were sent to get Harry. And that's kind of a big question as to why are there so many, you know, seasoned. Now we learn Tonks is an Auror as well, so you've got at least two Aurors here. I think she mentions that Kingsley's also an Auror. So we've got several Aurors, which we know are dark wizard hunters, along with a multitude of other seasoned wizards that are here to just pick up Harry. So it's kind of a big lingering question, is like, why so many? What is going on here?
I mean, it just brings up the question, why so serious?
that was a nice
No, I think you're absolutely right that part of it makes sense in that we've already had a Dementor attack in this, like, against Harry. So it makes some sense of why you would send so many. But I think you absolutely are calling out something that's really important. Like, what is going on? Like, and we're getting the feeling that there is more going on in the wizarding world than we have any idea, that's not good. And the fact that they've had to set up a headquarters for, you know, safety, that we're not going back to the Burrow. So we're getting little bits and pieces that are letting us know there's something not right, you know, here in the wizarding world. Obviously, we already know because Voldemort's back, but things are not going well. And this gives us even more hints towards that. So I love, though, them leaving and Harry's moment of flying, like kicking off and flying. He feels this rush of just pure joy. It feels so good for him to be back in the air, away from, you know, Privet Drive and back in the wizarding world. It feels like something has exploded inside of him that he can't contain, and he doesn't want to contain at this moment.
Well, and I think he had thought, as part of his sort of worst case scenario, that he would never be able to experience this again, right?
Right.
And so for him to sort of have it right away and have his favorite, it's basically his favorite thing. Like, flying is his favorite thing in the world, which we've learned. I mean, it's part of Quidditch. It's part of, it's what mm-hmm. he's best at. Like, he just, he loves flying. For him to have thought he lost that and have it back so quickly, I think he was just like, I couldn't have asked for a better way to wrap up my time at the Dursleys. So I did find it interesting, and I'm not sure that it ever really gets explained. But I don't understand how they can talk to each other while they're flying. I have to imagine it's loud. I have to imagine that they're a good distance apart. You know, I just have to imagine it'd be difficult for them to talk to each other while they're flying. I mean, it's hard to talk to people when you ride bikes down the street or on an airplane when you're encapsulated in an airplane. So
that's a great question. I wonder if there's some sort of, you know, like magical spell that they can do so that they can hear each other, or if they just, you know, if while they're talking to each other, they fly really close, you know, in formation
or something.
Yeah, I don't know. That is a good question, though.
Yeah, I always kind of wondered that. I mean, they do it in the books, but even in the movies, they kind of have to shout a little bit, and you can only kind of understand what they're saying. But I mean, in this chapter alone, they have a full-on conversation. You know, Moody wants to double back and make sure they're not being followed. And, you know, Tonks is like, no, it's cold. We're not being followed. It's fine, you know. And like that argument, like how do you have, I mean,
right.
That's just so difficult to have had in the space that they're in. So it feels unnecessary now, right? Mm-hmm. Right now it feels that way because, you know, they don't circle back and they make it there just fine. So, okay, Moody. But yeah, I always thought it was interesting. I was always curious how they talk when they're flying.
It does seem like that there must be some sort of like magical spell that allows
Or like, you know, when Dumbledore puts the wand to his neck and all of a sudden can like, something mm-hmm. like that, where it kind of works like that, where they can kind of like talk to each other in like a bubble around them.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that I'll call it out, you know, in the Fantastic Beasts, the new movie, there are some moments where you see magic like that, you know, where you just like, oh, that makes so much sense that they would be able to do that, you know. And so to see that kind of visually played out in the films, they tend to do that where they kind of extrapolate those kind of things, and they're starting to do that even more and more in this new series, so that's kind of cool. So I agree with you. I like that.
My guess is that she didn't think about it.
Probably not.
It just wasn't a factor, and I'm thinking way too hard about it because it's been, you know, decades since the book came out, and now she's putting those pieces together and going, oh, people care about that. Okay, let's address it. But yeah, I did find it really interesting, like how they were able to have such a conversation while they were traveling. And then they get to their headquarters, and we find out that Moody has the device that Dumbledore had at the very beginning of the very mm-hmm. first book. And he turns out all the lights so that no mugging. So no muggles' prying eyes can see what's going on. And then we get a really interesting introduction to the headquarters.
Yeah, I love that he hands Harry a note. He says, read this piece of paper. And it says, the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix may be found at number 12, Grimmauld Place, London. And that's the end.
And that's the end of the chapter.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's just a fun, you know, I think I really enjoy this book so far in the sense that Rowling has really allowed places to breathe, you know, and mm-hmm. part of that has been just, I think in the first few chapters, we're really allowing Harry's frustrations to build, and we're giving time for that to happen so that when we get to the next chapter in the book where Harry will release a lot of this, this feeling, you've been able to spend time in the first few chapters building up towards that, and it doesn't feel unrealistic what's about to happen. So really appreciate
that the payoff is satisfying. Yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
Like you go through this and she wants to make sure that you're able to get, I mean, I hate when a book or a movie tortures you and then never gives you a good payoff. Like, why do I want to do that? So she's very cognizant of that, and we'll make sure that we understand the whole
yes.
the holistic journey that he's gone through here.
Well, so if anybody, Drea, just wants to catch up with you and talk to you about what's going on here in the Order of the Phoenix, or maybe they want to talk to you about the latest Fantastic Beasts movie, where can everybody find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFJick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd all under the name of MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week. I'm on the Track FM network. I do a couple of shows over there. One is called the 602 Club, which I mentioned. You can find Drea and I talking about Crimes of Grindelwald over there, as well as so many other shows through so many different franchises that we love. You can also find me on The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And then last but not least, I do a show with my friend Courtney, and that's called Cinema Stories. And we talk about films through the lens of faith. But we want to say thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.